Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 8, delivered on February 7, 2013. The title of this lecture is Financial Statement Analysis.
Today, financial statement analysis. The topic is that we're doing today is kind of the heart and soul of finance, starting with financial statements, pulling them apart, and doing some ratios and other mathematical things, not hard things, but you have to know the formulas, and saying, what does this tell me about the company? What does this ratio or what does this change tell me? Now, before I get started, I'm going to write something on the board, a little formula that you've probably seen it before. I don't know, though, because I kind of get surprised that a lot of people say, I've never seen this formula before. But it's one of the most important things you can do when you're looking at financial statements, or actually in a lot of different contexts. This is an important little formula. The percent change, delta is the symbol for change. Percent change is always calculated as the ending value, and this is for 1 year. I'm going to do this. Minus the beginning value all divided by the beginning value. And then you times it by 100% to get it as a percentage. Now you got to be careful about that because sometimes something will look like a percentage before you times by 100%. Make sure you times by 100% and then put the percent sign on it so that you know you've done a percentage. You see, percentages and changes are the most important thing you could talk about. Like, for example, do you eat candy bars? No. Darn. Who looks like I can't? You, woman. Okay, you've got a chocolate bar for a dollar. It goes up to $1.25. Is that the same thing as you wanted this $20,000 car, this $10,000 car, you cheap car, and it goes up to $10,001.25? Is that the same? Are you going to have the same reaction to those two changes in price? No, even though they're the same absolute amount, they're not the same dollar amount. Percentages and percentage changes give us a way so that we can compare apples to apples. And so if I were to tell you, all right, we've got net income for 2011 and then again for 2012 on some company, and its net income goes from $86,000 in 2011 and that rises to, let's say, $92,000 in 2012. Well, I could say, well, it went up by $6,000. Well, that really doesn't tell me much. I can't compare that to a company that might be three times as large. So what I do is I look at that as a percentage change, the ending value less the beginning value, all divided by that beginning value, and then I times the result by 100%. Now, if I do that in this case, which I should have done before I started this lecture. I would say, well, that's 92,000 minus 86,000, and then all of that divided by 86,000. Well, that is a 6.9 8% change. Now, as I've said at the beginning, and I'll emphasize this again, in this course, always round to two decimal places of accuracy. At the end, don't round along the way because you can get an error that could burn you on a quiz or on an exam. Once you've gotten your final answer, bring it to two decimal places, always. Now, that's part of kind of like house rules. You'll hear many companies do the two decimal rule. Do your reports with two decimal places of accuracy. Some three, some one, some zero decimal places of accuracy. Two is kind of like normal to see as the house rule for most businesses, but it can vary. So the house rule here is this. Okay, so now we've got, the income went up, net income went up by almost 7% on this company. Then I can compare this to companies in the same industry of other sizes. A company that has net income in the millions of dollars, I can say, well, let's see what its percentage change was in net income, and then I can do a comparison. Whereas if I just looked at the absolute numbers, it wouldn't tell me much in comparison. That's why that's a useful thing to know in this kind of a context. Really? Okay. Now, having taken that off to the side, I'm going to show you, to switch gears here just a little bit and show you, I'm going to pull out some financial statements. Now, I'm going to put up financial, I write down these formulas as I write them down in a little bit here, but I'm going to put up a sheet tonight. Yeah, I'll try to get it up tonight. It's financial analysis formulas. So you don't have to memorize formulas. You can bring them with you to the exam. You're allowed to have this sheet on the exam and all of that as well. But I'm going to write them down here as I go along just to mention a few things as I'm going through this with you. Bear with me before I forget to do this. Make an ass of myself. There you go. Now, mother's work is never done. Here, let me show you something. Whoops, let me back out here. This is the SEC's EDGAR website. It's probably your best link for getting financial information. Now, you can get information from places like Yahoo Finance, Google Finance, MSN Finance, and all of that. However, they all derive their figures from here because this is where you have to report to the federal government as a corporation. I used to do this as a way of making money. I would prepare these EDGAR filings for companies and then just push them out. It's just code. It was writing in code and all of that. And then they started sort of blasting the small players in that field out and they made the interfaces a lot easier right about when they chased us out. So now it's a lot easier than it used to be to code these in. And then you just upload these to the SEC, and then they get posted right away. All of these required filings. The most important here for us is we're going to go after a 10-K, which is the annual report, essentially the annual statement of operations. And for this exercise, I'm going to pull up Walgreens this time. See what they look like for the time being. Now, always be careful because there are different kinds. Sometimes you'll get several listings with the same name. Sometimes you get a lot of listings because the company will have subsidiaries with about the same name. But this looks like it. Retail drug stores and proprietary stores. There you go. Now, we're going to grind through here. Now, they filed a 10-Q. These are the quarterly updates. And then here's the 10-K that we'll use. We'll look at annual data. It's near the end of the year, it looks like. Yeah, their fiscal year ended in October. So we're going to use the interactive data. Watch how you do this. This is so much easier than it used to be. Find your document. Oh, by the way, let me bring up a couple of things, okay? And these, I actually filed these. I was the preparer of these long ago, and they're still the same numbers and all of that apply. Okay, a 10-Q is a quarterly. It's just sort of like an ongoing, here's our financials, here's the situation with the company, here's all of the things that we're required to file with the SEC under the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. It's a structured, stylized document. You upload it to the SEC, and just like anything you file with the government, they don't approve it. All they do is make sure that it is in compliance, standardized, you've got all the parts in there. But they don't say this is right or wrong. They can go through later and enforce and act on an enforcement matter with respect to a material misrepresentation. But, hey, you're on your own knowing that, well, yeah, it was audited and all of that, but the SEC doesn't say this is right. So that's a Q. That's a quarterly. And they've had one quarter since their last fiscal year ended. A couple of more along the way. Here's our big one right here, the 10K. That's the annual report, audited financials, exhausting, a huge document. Got a lot of important things in it that a lot of analysts don't even bother to look at. But it's got lots more than just financial statements in it. But that's what we're going to look at here today. See this guy right here in 8K? 8Ks are reports on non-recurring items. So an 10K and a 10Q, you report those all out on a periodic basis. An 8K is something that has happened that is outside of the normal realm of the activities of the company. So for example, you are the CEO of the company. You die. I'd file an 8K. I'd be sad, but first I have to file an 8K. Okay? You resigned in disgrace. You were caught in a sleazy hotel with a duck. I don't know. Get off me. I had to think of something fast there. Okay, you file an 8K on it. Interestingly, back in the day, I made my money off these 8Ks because these were little companies, and they would do what we used to call pump and dump. They would put out press releases to try to make their stock go up. Then the insiders would sell like a boss to make a little money, and then the stock price would drop real fast when all that stock dumped into the market. But every time you do a press release, you have to file an 8K with it. So I was okay with these guys pumping out press releases every couple of weeks or whenever the president or one of the vice presidents was desperate for some money. Back in the day, you can't do it quite as easily now, but if you do a press release, you have to say, well, this happened on 8K. If you appoint a new CEO, there's an 8K filing. Anything that's kind of like not in the normal course of business, that's an 8K. These are useful to watch out for because it's sort of like you can read tea leaves. Okay, what does this mean to the company? Do the fundamental analysis. And of course, you're going to have hundreds and thousands of others doing fundamental analysis, but that doesn't mean that you might not see something that other analysts don't see in an 8K filing. A lot of them are fluff, though, of course, but sometimes you can see something golden here. S8. S8 is a registration statement where you just simply file with the government, with the SEC, that you've given stock to someone like a consultant. S8s were the big stuff in my business because I was a consultant and these companies didn't have a lot of money, so sometimes we would take our pay in stock that they would issue. And I'd write up an S8 and then that would be basically the extent of the filing for that kind of an issuance of stock, which is way outside of the way it's normally done. A little warning here. Always watch out for these little slash A's. That's an amendment to a statement. Now, you can see here that a 10Q was filed. And if you, there's my 10Q. I'm going to grab and look. And if you don't notice that there was an amendment, you might be looking at information that was incorrect, and they corrected it and fixed it in this amended filing. So always when you grab, let's say, a 10K, look up the line to make sure that there wasn't an A filed afterwards that amended something. Otherwise, you could be using data that's not the best. Is there anything else worth looking at here? Q's and K's, a lot of this is just Q's and K's. These 14As and all of that kind of stuff. 8Ks, not really. Annual reports, ARS or annual reports. They got some stuff in them that's worth looking at, but those are the things that they send out in pretty brochures to their big stockholders and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I've noticed something interesting about Walgreens. I don't think I see these hardly ever, is 8KAs. Usually just pump, you just write up an 8K. It's a really short thing. Well, we did this or this happened, and that's the end of it. And this Walgreens does A's. So apparently they pump out these 8Ks, and then they say, oh, well, we didn't say it quite right. We got to fill in some blanks or correct something we said in the 8K. That's a little odd to me. Correspondences up, those are back and forth with the SEC and other regulators. This is beneficial ownership by individuals. In other words, when they're handing out stock for CEOs and stuff like that, those are. It's if you are into this kind of stuff, this is your gold mine for looking up information that can help you out. Now, let me take you back here. I'm going to get you hooked up with this. Now, if you have interactive data, that's great. And almost all the 10Ks being filed these days have interactive data. Watch what happens. First, you get a nice little summary. But then you can just click on financial statements, and you don't have to search through a massive document. I mean, the 8Ks are like books. And back in the day, that was, you made a lot of money if you were a consultant who wrote those for a company, and then you handed them off to accountants to audit and all this, and certify, and lawyers and all that. But they're huge, and just finding the financials is a pain in the rear end. But with this interactive trick that's now available, you can go right to the one. Statement of earnings, statement of shareholders' equity. Where's my damn consolidated statement of, where's my income statement? Statement of earnings. Is that what they call that nowadays? Oh, there we go. Oh, look at that. Nice, compact. It doesn't have tons of categories. It's real tight, and it gives you a lot of information. I'm not telling you that this just for this class. I'm telling you this because you'll go into other classes where marketing classes, operations classes, I'll say, well, we need this information from the financials. Go here. It's right there, and it's probably the easiest way to find it and find it reliably rather than chasing it down on Yahoo or Google or something like that. Right here it is, all for you. And this is a nice little compact representation of it. Okay, working your way through the financial statements, you can see this is pretty straightforward stuff here. Net sales, blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. Started off, just a quick one, and I'm going to do this just right off the bat. Let's see how well their financials have gone from August 31 of 2010 to August 31 of 2011. I kind of wish they had the 2012s in there. That's a little weird that they don't have the 2012s in there. I wonder why that is. Let me see something here. Their last 10K is 2011. I'm going for the wrong one. I was just testing your ass there. 10K, there's the one for this year. Yacking my brains out, not looking at what I'm doing. There we go. Statements of comprehensive income. Here it is. There we go. Ooh, look at that. So, and I would encourage you to do this with me. Let's just see what net income did from 2011 to 2012. If I were to run that number over there, I'd say, okay, here we go. Well, it would be the end, 71,633, minus the beginning, 72,184. And then take that, divided by the 72,184, and then I times that by 100. Now, the number that comes out on the calculator is negative 0.007. Now, if I times that by 100 to turn it into a percentage, I find that Walgreens, and I'll switch this over to here, from 2,000% change revenue 2011 to 2012, in this case, came out to be a negative 0.76%. Less than a percent drop, but it's still a drop, which isn't kind of the greatest thing in the world to notice, okay? that's bad news right there. They had a revenue slippage. Okay, now, before we go any further, this is where we get into what we call actual critical thinking. Right off the top of your head, talk to me. What do you think? Why did it go down? Why did Walgreens' revenue go down? The economy, okay? We were still in struggling, but we were beginning to come out of it in 2012. We were clawing our way out. So you're probably right to some extent, but it still worries me that they were lagging the economic recovery in general. They certainly could have at least sold something to someone, but it appears that they were a little bit more sensitive and they'd been beaten harder by the recession. Another reason. What would be another reason? You got any idea of what would be another reason that Walgreens would have had a slippage in revenue? It wasn't major. It's less than 1%. But still, when you have a company's revenue slide, that's a worry. You got any guess? Not a good one. Okay, how about you? Do you have any idea? I heard about that. And that was definitely something that you would have to research. Okay, let's look at what's going on with Walgreens. Oh, look at that. That's an interesting thing. That might explain the revenue loss right there. And if it was that, then I would have expected it to be a hell of a lot worse than it was. But, you know, that's probably a very good reason. There's one other one that might also be worth talking about, too, or at least suggesting as a possibility. A contributing factor like the other ones. The economy, loss of business, and one more, loss of business from their purchasers, their major purchasers, and all of that. Any other ones that could possibly be?
Expansion of buildings.
Well, there's an interesting one right there, but that should show up down lower on the financial statement somewhere. But also, sometimes when you do expansions, you damage your revenues. A good example of that, a major risk that was taken by a retailer that I have a great deal of respect for them. They're willing to take the risk. Did you notice that Target, a couple of last year was just gutting some of their stores and completely redoing the whole store? That can hurt your revenue if you do that kind of an expansion or that kind of a modernization. But for them, they understand you've got to stay with the times. If you end up being like a JCPenney or a Sears, where the store still looks like the one grandma went into when she could still walk. There you go. Okay, that's an expansion. Another one that might be there. Yeah.
Competition.
Good. Have you any of you noticed that there is a CVS on every damn corner of the planet? CVS, they are just throwing them down. Really, there's a Walmart, there's a Walgreens, there are all these other places that people can get prescriptions filled and all that. You plop a CVS right down in the middle of them. What are you thinking? Well, they're thinking something, but it's that competition. Okay, well, I used to go to Walgreens, but that CVS looks nice and new, so I think I'll go in there and see what's going on there. That is another one. So you have that, just basically a shark in the water in CVS just putting up a building everywhere. And, of course, Walgreens is trying the same thing, though. They've simply saying, okay, if CVS is going to pull this stunt, then we're just going to do it, too. We're going to slap Walgreens anywhere we can and on any corner simply to saturate the market with the lower order goods that we sell at higher prices. And also, of course, you've got the ongoing competition because Walgreens does charge more for the stuff in the store than you can get the same stuff at Meijer, Walmart, Costco. So there are a lot of factors coming into play here, but we've got some meat right off the bat. Now, let's switch back over here, and let's see what the impact was on the net earnings. That's, oh, by the way, a warning again. The same line can be called different things by different companies. Net earnings, net income, profit. You can get all these different things. Operating income is EBIT. So watch it when you see these, because sometimes you'll say, well, what is that? Well, look at the line it is on. Okay, that must be their net income. So that's what's going on here. Now let's look at what happened to their net earnings. They went from $27,014 in 2011 to $21,027 in this year. So again, just grinding out the number, and like I said, I encourage you to make sure you can just do this. The ending value, $21,027, minus the beginning value, $27,014. There you go. That'll really give me the end. $21,027 minus... And please do this with me in case I make a mistake. Someone tell me. Divided by the beginning value, $27,014. Ouch! Really? Well, that escalated quickly. What do you get for the loss in income, in net income? Did you get percent change? That's a change. Percent change in net income. What did you get? Yeah, 21.63%. Oh, that'll leave a mark. Notice something, that the loss in revenue was magnified down to the bottom line. You're going to see in a few lectures, I'm going to show you more about why this happens. You'll actually be able to calculate the reasons. There are two possible reasons for this to happen. Well, there are a bunch of reasons for it to happen. But there are two major reasons for this to happen. But one way or the other, you had an incredible magnification of the loss of revenue by the time we got to the net income line. It's like you go out and you lose money, you buy a lottery ticket for a dollar and you don't win anything on it. By the time you get home, you're bankrupted, you're nude because you lost your clothes, and they've also shot your ass. That's basically what happened here. Do you see how that was just like an explosion of destruction that happened along the way? That's why then you can just go along through the financial statement and start calculating these percentage changes. Where in the world did this company get its clock cleaned like that? And if you look just along the way, notice one thing is that the cost of goods sold pretty much mirrored the drop. And you don't have to do a calculation all the time to do this stuff. A lot of this is, you know, you can go overboard with numbers sometimes. But you'll see that, well, yeah, revenue dropped a smidgen and gross profit dropped a smidgen. So it wasn't an increase in their costs, their wholesale costs that really hurt them. That's not the explanation. They're still cruising with a little bit of a ding on their revenues getting to the gross profit line. And by the way, what I'm doing here is I'm showing you how the old school people like us in the financial world did this. We just look and we talk about it, and we start teasing into the financials, see what's in there. Okay. Well, they're selling general and administrative expenses. That's salaries, light bills, all that kind of stuff, CEO salaries and worker wages and all that. It went up a little bit. Didn't do much. I mean, it's not something dramatic. It went from 16,561 to 16,878. So that didn't really do much. They had a sale of a business in 2011. That's kind of nice, but it wasn't anything major. You notice that it was really like maybe a 2.5% amount of money on gross profit, something like that. But dang, there it is. That big drop was the result, it looks like, of a significant sale in 2011. And so that they didn't have another thing to sell in 2012. So that may explain a whole lot, not everything, but that goes to explain some of that big loss. Their interest expense went up. In other words, they were borrowing money. And that probably, why were they borrowing more money so that they were paying more interest in 12 than in 11? What would that be about? Any guess? Talk to me.
Maybe to build.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they were using debt to build. In other words, they were borrowing to keep this pace of throwing up these little Walgreens all over the place. They were obviously using, not obviously, but it looks to me like they were using leverage, debt leverage, to do this that trick. So there you go. Well, they didn't pay as much in tax, and they provided less in taxes, so that should have made them happy. But man, all of that together, the fact that they had an inflated earnings in 2011 because they sold something, they had more debt, they had somewhat higher selling, general, and administrative costs, and but they saved money on taxes. So at the end of the day, they got their asses kicked as far as the drop in net income. At least it's positive, but it was a drop. So the concern here is, I can't tell you one thing that happened. It's like a composite picture. And that's something that kind of worries you. When you've got a composite, it's not as easy to say, all right, let's fix this inside the company. They've got a multi-pronged issue going on. Okay, here we go. Through the meat grinder. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to put up a document. Let me get the document camera running here. Now this, you're going to be able to download this from our website, ReggieNet, here. I'll also put up a link to it on my own site, too, so you can have two different ways. Is that in focus and I just suck, or? Is that in focus? Oh, okay, good. Thought I can't be getting that close to death this early in the day. How do you focus? There. Well, no, not there. Man, that's not a good view. Let me see if it looks better if I zoom it out here a little bit. Okay. And again, this will be on the website. You download it, you save it, and print it. You're allowed to have this on the exam, on exam one. And essentially what I do on exam one is I give you a real company, and I say, all right, I want you to go through and calculate some ratios, some percentage changes in the numbers on the financial statements, and even a few percentage changes in ratios, so we can see what the ratios themselves are doing year to year. All of those things are part of what we do in the business of financial analysis. What am I thinking? Okay, start it off here. These are the profitability ratios. And some of these, gross profit over sales, operating margin over sales, net income over sales. And they're not hard to do. I mean, all you have to do is just look at the numbers on here. And I would encourage you, whoops, I didn't mean to do that. There it is. So, your gross margin. All you do is you simply take your gross profit for the year, and I'll do 2012, and I'll say, okay, 20342 divided by sales, 71,633. And your gross profit comes out, if you do that, to be 28.40%. Now, is that good or bad? The first thing I'd probably want to do is see how much it changed from the last year to this year. Do a percentage change. Get both of the gross margins and then do the percentage change. Then I'd want to look at the industry itself. What's the typical gross margin? In this company, after they pay the difference between their retail price and their wholesale price, basically that's what you're looking at, they are keeping about a little more than 28 cents of every dollar. So in other words, if they sell something for a dollar, 72 cents of that is going to their is what they paid for it with their wholesalers. That's basically what it's saying to you. Now, that's kind of interesting when you think about it, because they charge pretty high prices at a Walgreens. But at the same time, even at that, their gross margin is actually kind of surprisingly small, keeping only 28 cents of, I'm sorry, 20, yeah, 20, what is that number again? Yeah, keeping 22 cents, about 22 cents it is, of every dollar that they spend, that they charge, that's all they keep from the retail to the whole, from the wholesale to the retail. That's a surprisingly small number considering how inflated their prices look to the outside. So there you go. Whatever. Okay, now, looking over here again, switching back to the ratios, operating margin. In other words, after they've paid for the stuff that they sell, and after they've paid all their bills to the employees, salaries, the lights, the telephones, internet connections, after they've paid all of those, and of course there'd be depreciation expense in there too somewhere, but after they do all of those, there's your operating margin. And if I do that for this company, if I do the operating margin for the company, I'd say, okay, operating income, 34.64 divided by 34. Why do I? Oh, 21.27. No, I'm sorry. Divided by 71.633. 71.633. 4.84%. Is that what you get? 4.84%? Is that their operating margin? Yeah, that's their operating margin. EBIT over sales. Good Lord, that is a... In other words, after they've paid for their merchandise, after they've paid all of their salaries, wages, utility bills, all that kind of stuff, taken out their depreciation, they have less than fewer than five pennies left on their sale. So there's only five pennies that make it to the point where they have the money to pay their interest. And that's where we get to the next one. And that's, well, actually, that's not in this realm. But now we can do the net margin. The net margin. In other words, how much do they have left at the end of the day? So net margin would be net earnings divided by sales, and in this case, for the 2012, 21.27 divided by 71.633, 2.97. So their net margin, how much is left of a dollar of sales after they've paid all of their bills, including their interest, including their taxes, including lights, salaries and wages, wholesale cost, they have less than 3 cents left that belongs to the shareholders. Less than 3 cents belongs to the shareholders. Now, is that bad or is that good? You'd have to say, all right, what's the industry do? How is that compared to the industry? To CVS, to other pharmacy and retail goods kinds of stores. Is that bad or is that good? It's hard to tell without looking at other companies. The answer to that is net margin is all over the place. Some companies have net margins that are huge. Some companies have them that are less than a penny. This, well, there you go. Now, there are two other ratios I want to bring up. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Is there some reason I just did that? I hate that. Why did I do that? You know what? There. Document camera. Now, I'm not going to go through all of these ratios with you here, but I'm going to hit a few that are kind of important to look at. One of them that is important to look at here, two of them. are these last two profitability ratios, because you have to use the income statement and the balance sheet to get these two. The return on assets, ROA, is your net earnings divided by your total assets. So in this case, for the ROA, what you have to do is, really, you have to get your return on assets, you get your net income divided by your total assets. So in this case, I would have to switch over, well, first get the net income, which is 2127. 2127 divided by, and then you have to switch over to the balance sheet and find your total assets. 33,462. So that would be your return on assets. $21,27 divided by $33,462. Is a 6.36%. 6.36%. In other words, it's like saying this. These total assets are our investment portfolio. That's the total value of our investment portfolio. How much did that make at the bottom line as far as income? How much did those assets earn on a percentage basis? The answer is, it earned those total assets, that giant investment in all of the property, plant, and equipment, and all of the inventory, all of that stuff along the way, it earned the shareholders 6.36%. The total assets did that. Now, is that great or is that sucky? Again, you'd have to look at the industry. But overall, that's not an exciting number to me at all. For all that hard, all those hard assets, they generated that much at the bottom line? Eh, whatever. Okay, ROE. ROE is net income over how much the shareholders have put into the company. Shareholders' equity. Or owner's equity. Let me call it owner's equity. So in that case, it would be 2127 divided by, now I'm going to switch back over here. I hate to, this is going to make me hurl doing this. But now I can look over here. Let's look at the shareholder's equity. And I'm doing it just so you know how to find it. Total shareholder's equity is right there.
Can you put it up on the screen?
Oh, I'm just testing you. I just want to see if you, okay. I was doing so smoothly there that I just, okay, 18,236. 18,236. So, there is the ROE, return on equity. In other words, how much shareholder money, how much did the shareholders' money earn? What really is a shareholder's investment? How much did that earn? And in this case, we'll have 2127 divided by 18,236, and we get a whopping 11.67%. No, 66%, sorry. 66%. Is that great? Is that bad? Well, it's there. You'd have to look at what similar risk investments. A shareholder would say this, okay. I'm investing my money in this company, my shareholders' equity. I could sell or I could hold on. If I sold and bought something that was equally risky, would I earn more, less, or about the same as this? That's how you have to look at it. So I'd probably say, how does this ROE compare to, let's say, CVS? How does this ROE compare to, let's say, Walmart or Meijer? So the question then boils down to, what is the opportunity cost of holding my investment in this company, given that my stake in this company the shareholders' equity is cranking out 11.66% that I have the claim to as a shareholder at the bottom line. That's how you have to ask it. Last thing I'm going to do right here and now on this whole top, on this whole subject, is I'm going to switch one over here one more time for you, show you one more thing. I apologize for flipping around here so much on these. Document camera. Let me bring you over to the document camera. Look at numbers like this. These are called your liquidity numbers. They simply tell you how much your assets are working. These are the current asset ratios. Little caution to you here. The book does the first two, current and quick ratio. The book doesn't show you the burn ratio. This is an old school ratio, and I'll explain it to you. I'll do these here for you, and then I'll say a last few words about these asset activity ratio. I'm sorry, about, where's, why am I not seeing plowback, debt? Oh, debt ratios. Okay, I need to bring those up here too. Let me do the current ratio for you. Current and all those kinds of stuff. I'm sorry. Okay, current ratio. The current ratio is your current assets divided by your current liabilities. So the current ratio for this company would be, for 2012, would be 10,760. 10,760 divided by the current liabilities, 8,722. And the number that you get for that is 1.23. So the current ratio for this company is 1.23. A warning to you. The current ratio and all of these ratios I'm about to do here are not percentages. They are factors. So the units of measure are timeses. You make sure that you know that for the exam, because part of your credit will be whether you give me the right units or not. What the current ratio says is how many times over my current assets can cover my current liabilities. How many times over can my current assets cover my current liabilities? The next one on the list is what is called, I have another name for it, I'll tell you, I almost said the wrong name, the quick ratio. You are going to hear me call it the acid test. That's the old school name for it. It's acid. Because it works like this. The acid test is your current assets minus your inventory over your current liabilities. The reason we care about this is that if you had to cover your current liabilities right away, your inventory is probably not going to get you jack. Simply because it's Walgreens inventory. Yeah, you'll get some companies come swooping in, buy it for pennies on the dollar. But if you had to cover your current liabilities with your current assets real fast, that inventory isn't going to be worth anything to you. So in this case, and I'll put the numbers down here, the current assets are 10,760. Let me pull this up a little bit here. 10,760 minus the inventory, which was 7,036, all divided by your current liabilities, which came out,8,722. So the acid test, the quick ratio in polite company, is 10,760 minus that inventory, 7036, And that whole all divided by 8722. Ooh. 0.43 times. In other words, if you take out the inventory, this company can cover its current liabilities less than half with its current assets. So if push came to shove and they had to get their current liabilities paid off, they probably would be dead because they don't have enough current assets, not taking into account their inventory, which they could sell at pennies on the dollar. That's a big problem.
Is this why companies try to keep inventory down?
You better believe it. You better believe it. You can get it too low. That's a bad thing there too, because if you have a bottleneck, you're dead. You can't sell. But at the same time, you analysts, and I'm somewhat this way, we get kind of excited about companies that are just so loaded with inventory that, you know, hey, that's all there is to it. If you're in real trouble, you've got to cover a lot of current liabilities real fast. What the hell are you going to do? And give you an idea. This is a little off the record here, but in my own business, my own company, a lot of different venues I can sell in. And selling through your own website is one of the worst ways in the world to sell some products. And that's why you have to cut companies like Target, Walgreens, CVS, those kinds of companies you have to cut slack for, because they don't have this online experience. Their brick and mortar is where they do their stuff. So am I. But if I want online, it's going to have to be an 800-pound gorilla like Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. So what happens with Amazon.com? Well, yeah, they'll contract with me, but they don't want any inventory of mine. They'll just send me a message, oh, someone wants your stuff, send them your shit. So they keep the inventory off their financials. And not only that, while I am on the subject, they say that whatever you charge, we're going to keep 55% of it. Well, you know what? They can kiss my... Oh, sorry. No, seriously. I mean, you see, the companies like that, they keep their inventory lean. Yeah, they're nothing essentially... What the old term for them was, we called them a derogatory term back in the old days of the web, we called them link farms. It's just nothing but essentially a glorified link farm. They find me customers, which is great, but I have to hold the inventory. I have to give them this stupid markup, and then at the end of the day, I don't use them because they can kiss my ass. Anyway, okay. Last one. This is the one that's not in the book, but I will test you on it. Some way I'll find a way to test you on it. It's called the burn ratio. The burn ratio says, you know what, your current assets. What are current assets? Cash and marketable securities, your accounts receivable, maybe some prepaid expenses, and your inventory. There's your current liability, current assets. Well, you know what? If you really had to pay your current liabilities all off today, the only thing that's going to matter is the cash in your pocket. So the burn ratio says, cut the crap. Cash on hand, yeah, maybe your marketable securities divided by your current liabilities. In other words, take away everything that is in current assets except for the one thing that you know for sure you can pull out and pay a bill with, and that's cash. Let's go down there and look at Walgreens for the cash and marketable securities. Cash and equivalents. Cash and equivalents, they're at the top, $12.97. So $12.97. And I'll turn this back on, over 8722. Guess what? Oh, a mother's work is never done. Let me turn this on, mute this, and see what we get. 1297 divided by 8722. Yeah, about 0.15 times. They could only pay about 15% of their current liabilities with the cash on hand. If push came to shove and the thugs came to the door saying, satisfy the current liabilities now, they could satisfy only 15% of them. Now, again, I emphasize that it's not probably not going to come to that. But at the same time, you can see that this is a company that is cash lean. Most of their current assets are basically, it's their inventory that's what supports their current assets. So they are spending most of their money getting inventory, and then they sell it out as fast as they can. And that's why you've got things like inventory turnover ratios. I'm going to show you one more here. Now remember, though, times is for these because they're simply factors. The units cancel top and bottom. That's how you know that it's a times instead of a percent. Well, actually, that's not true, but one way or the other. Okay, I'm going to show you one more here that's a useful one. It's the two debt ratios, real quick here. The two debt ratios. Now, on the document camera, my two debt ratios are debt to total assets and the times interest earned. They're both useful, but they're also one of them I have to give you a warning about. The debt to total assets, and I'm going to switch over here to the PC. Debt to total assets, I would take my long-term debt divided by my total assets. That tells me the leverage of the company, the financial leverage. How much of this company is debt as opposed to equity? In this case, my total debt, long-term debt, is 4073 divided by my total assets, 33,462. So the total debt, well, that's interesting, is really not that high at all. It's only about 12.17%. This is a company that actually doesn't use that much debt. That would explain why their times interest earned, their interest payments went up. They can afford to take on a little more debt because they're still mostly an equity company. However, a warning to you. Always look up in your liabilities to make sure that there are no notes payable. If there are, you have to add those to the long-term debt. Because some companies, and I've seen this more in recent years, it looks like their long-term debt is staying stable or maybe going down. And I calculate a total debt to assets ratio. And then I realize, oh, they shifted their debt to shorter maturity instruments. Look at the notes payable. It's skyrocketing. In this case, I don't see any. I don't see any notes payable. But always be on the lookout. And if you see notes payable, you have to add those to the long-term debt. You have to, because otherwise the company's trick of sliding its debt to shorter maturities is going to bluff you out as to the total leverage of the company. The last one that I'm going to show you here, bring this over back up to the, I'm trying to touch the screen. I've been using that iPad too much, is what's called your times interest earned. Your times interest earned is a big one. Now, I'm going to talk more about these from an analysis perspective on Tuesday. Crunch a few numbers, but mostly just talking it through, looking at how things work. Because in the reality of it, ratios can be too high or too low. Here's one, you have an absolute showstopper on one side of it. Times interest earned is nothing but your EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, divided by your interest. In other words, how many times over can you pay your interest with the money that is available to pay the interest? And in this case, the EBIT of this company is operating income 3,464 divided by 88.
3464 divided by 88 is 39.36. In other words, they can pay their interest with the money that's available to pay interest almost 40 times over. That's actually a very high number that I would be a little uncomfortable with. That's, in other words, they got so much money, they could pay a lot more in interest and use that debt leverage to expand their operations. Clearly, they've elected not to do it that way. But here's a thing. See this times interest earned? If it is ever less than one, well, let me ask you, what if it's less than one? If the money that they have available to pay their interest is not enough to pay the interest, what happens? Repeat after me. The debt holders will shoot my dog, sell my Bible on Craigslist, and make my mother wear furry costumes that please them. Because if you don't have enough money to pay your interest, you're gone. So if you ever see an EBIT, a times interest earned, that is less than one, that means the company is in default. Because the minute you can't pay your interest, the suits of your debt holders will go right to the court and say, it's our company. That's how serious it is. So that's why this one, you do not ever want to see a times interest earned below 1.00. When it's too high, like this one is really nosebleed high, I'm a little bothered by that. But at least I know that they're not going to go bankrupt. They can't go bankrupt. But if I ever see a times interest earned below one, game over. That's it right there. That's all I have for you today. Go home.